I like that beep. Oh, I'm off again. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Welcome to All About Wine, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery.
Labels themselves, they become an art form.
We encourage listeners, wine enthusiasts, and winemakers to call the show and discuss topics related to wine.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery.
Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
So, Alabama.
And now, from Florida Estates Winery,
here he is.
Thank you. Thank you. Bus people are all settled in, nice and toasty down there.
Yeah, they are definitely, what is it, down like 80 degrees or something out there in the 80s, definitely. It's been warming up pretty good. And I'm really, this time change really has me screwed up, because normally when I look at the window, it's dark. And now I'm looking out there, it's like, you know what, I still have more time outside. So
that's,
I don't know,
right, we can still sit outside in the sun.
Totally messes me up. I'm still not into it yet, but... Anyway, welcome back to All About Wine. It's Thursday. It's just after 7 p.m. Eastern Time here in Florida. And if you'd like to get on the program, we'd love to hear from you at area code 646-727-3235. That was the number for the third time, in case you didn't write it down the first two times. And when you get on there, you'll hear a little recording, and it'll tell you to press 1 if you want to go into the queue to go on air, or you can just sit there and listen to the show on your phone or through Skype or whatever, however you're calling into to that number. But definitely, if you want to get on the program and get on the air and be heard, then press that 1 key at any time during the show, and we'll see your hand go up, and I'll talk to you for a minute or less, and then we'll bring you on the air. So definitely do that. And tonight we are going to begin with Minnesota and
Minnesota.
A special guest a little bit later. So that'd be cool.
Minnesota. Before we go any further, again, the show is all about wine, but I just want to say, hope your team wins on the March Madness, whoever college team you're cheering for. Good luck to every one of you out there. I played basketball myself a little bit, and it's a tough sport, and good luck to all those guys out there. Minnesota. Minnesota is, well, as always, I like to tell you where it is and run down the little geography of it and all that. We do have a speaker coming on with us tonight in about 10 minutes or so. So that's something we can look forward to. Minnesota, located in northern United States, the surrounded on the west by both North and South Dakotas, on the south by Iowa, on the east by Wisconsin. Also, it's got... doesn't touch Michigan because of Lake Superior. It borders on Lake Superior. And then on the north is Canada. It's right on up there at the border. So that's Minnesota. It is a lot of water in Minnesota, a lot of lakes, a lot of the effects of the glaciers many, many, many centuries ago. The glaciers came through and spread out over Minnesota, and when it retreated, it left a lot of lakes and rivers and all that. So the whole state is full of lakes and rivers and just land of the thousand lakes. I've been to Minnesota. Beautiful, beautiful country there. Good hunting and all that good stuff. They have 87 counties in Minnesota, Cook County being the furthest east, and then the western edge of the state is got numerous counties on it. Red River is actually the border to the western ridge on the northern part, and then South Dakota on the southern part of the state. The little finger that bobs up at the top there, the Lake of the Woods County up at the top, is got a great big lake in it that goes through Canada. Lake of the Woods is the name of the lake, and To get to a little bit part of Minnesota up there, you have to actually go into Canada to get to part of the state of Minnesota, just the way it's shaped and way it's because of the lake. The highway system throughout Minnesota, I-90 runs along the southern edge of Minnesota, I-35, which runs up and down the United States. I-35 comes up into St. Paul, Minneapolis, St. Paul being the capital. Then I-35 goes on out and ends in Duluth, which is on up on Lake Superior. I-94 starts just comes into the state from Wisconsin, runs through St. Paul on up toward the north a little bit and on out. Those are the major highways. Quite a few U.S. highways running crisscross in the state and all around the state, except for the northeastern part, and a little bit more sparse there, a little less highways. Also, because of more hills, more elevation in that part of the state. Most of the state is rather low, 600 to 1,200 feet average for a majority of the state, and 1,200 to 1,800 feet is pretty much the rest of the state. It's not a high elevation. The lowest point in the state, right on Lake Superior, 601 feet, and the highest point in the state, Eagle Mountain, at 2,301 feet. So overall, pretty low state. Again, the major influence from the ice age is the reason for that, that it flattened everything out when it went through many, many years ago. The state of Minnesota is I was going to tell you when it came into the Union. Here it is. 1858 came into the Union. Minnesota wine, made from grapes, mostly that are very cold hardy, very cold climate hardy grapes. The University of Minnesota, and tonight the person that's going to be joining us, Tammy from Carlos Creek Winery, is also a board member of the Minnesota Grape Growers Association, so she can tell us a lot about the grapes that are being grown in Minnesota. I do want to go through this and tell you some of the stuff here about. I noticed when I was searching this, some of the grapes in Minnesota: La Crosse, St. Croix, Sabrevois, Sabrevois, Maréchal Foch, Frontenac, Frontenac Gris, which is a rather new one, Laura's Laughter. One I'd never heard of before. Prairie Star, Potter John, Saval Gewurztraminer, Chisago, I think it's pronounced Chisago, Chisago, Delaware, Geisenheim, Leon Malot, Millot, Malot, I believe it's pronounced also. Just some, but a lot of these grapes that I just went through and named for you there are grapes that have been developed by the University of Minnesota. They developed a lot of grapes out of there. The major horticulturalist for creating commercially successful cold climate varieties in Minnesota has been Elmer Swanson. Elmer Swanson has got his name attached to a lot of grapes. Born in 1913, died in 2004, was revolutionized grape growing in the upper Midwestern part of the United States. Cold hardy grapes, the man had just helped develop a lot of them, and because of that, a lot of these grapes are given credit to it. There's a whole list of them. I won't go through all the different ones that he has did. The ones I named you are just a few of the strange ones that that they named. Although I really have to qualify this, because Florida, we have a lot of hybrid grapes too, University of Florida hybrid grapes, and those names would be strange too, the people who aren't used to them, names like Swanee and Lake Emerald and Tampa, Orlando. These are some of the ones that University of Florida have made. So these others up here that he's came up with, Norway Red, for example, Petite Jewel, Louis Stevenson, Lorelei, Swinson White, all of these are different ones, Brianna, these are all different ones that he's came up with and during Elmer Swinson, during his years that he was developing cold hardy grapes. Most of them, he started to do that back in 1943, and most of them were French hybrid grapes with a breeding with the local wild variety, which is the Vitis riparia, R-I-P-A-R-I-A, riparia. And since the Vitis riparia is a native grape to that area, he was able to breed the good stuff that will survive into the French hybrids and come up with cold hardy grapes. If you cannot get a cold hardy grape, you got to be sure it's covered up in the winter because it will freeze. It'll freeze the insides of it and everything. To have a plant survive winter, it's got to be able to not freeze inside, have a little bit of antifreeze in it. So Elmer Swanson, a big name in agriculture, viticulture, and oenology in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota climate is cold almost all the time, I hate to say. They do have a couple of AVAs. One AVA is called the Alexandria Lakes AVA. The Alexandria Lakes AVA is located in Douglas County, which is near the city of Alexandria. Alexandria Lakes AVA is the first AVA for Minnesota that was established in 2005 as a result, actually, of petitioning the Department of Tobacco and Alcohol. The Department of Treasury, Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau, the TTB, actually, what we refer to it as affectionately. The Carlos Creek Winery, who we are talking to tonight, is the largest winery in the state, and they are the ones who actually petitioned to get the AVA in that. I'm sure Tammy will tell us that also. While we're talking to her tonight, but it's really cool that a winery stood up for itself and did that. The area encompasses 10,800 acres, or about 4,371 hectares. They have another AVA, and the second AVA is the Upper Mississippi AVA. This is the biggie. This is the biggest AVA. We talked about this in past programs about the size of this AVA. This AVA is enormous, biggest AVA in the world, biggest viticultural area, not just American, but the biggest viticultural area designation in the world, and by far the biggest one in the United States. Minnesota, the southern half, or southern part, I shouldn't say half, but the southern part of Minnesota pretty much encompasses that part of AVA, and it goes all the way down Iowa and past Missouri and into Arkansas, so also Illinois and areas on the other side of the river. So it's an enormous AVA, but that's the Mississippi River AVA. I can think of Mississippi. Minnesota wineries are not too many of them north. Most of them are and further south. There's just a couple, three of them that as far north as Duluth and that area there. Most all of them are down around Minneapolis, St. Paul, and that area there. A lot of the wineries use grapes that are grown in Wisconsin, Minnesota and Wisconsin grapes, which rather interesting when I was doing this, I discovered that they were the combination of both of them there. The early part of the 21st century, there was just a few wineries in Minnesota, not too many at all. Most of them were making grapes out of cold-resistant varieties, the Valiant, Edelweiss, La Crosse, Frontenac. In the early 21st century, I say this century, we're looking at 2000. A few French hybrids, the Maréchal Foch and the Chardonnay, but they've, because of the University of Minnesota, they are able to come up with a lot more grapes now, a lot more possibilities of wine. Yeah, Minnesota actually, to put it in perspective, actually shares the same northern latitudes, which are 43 and 49 degrees north latitudes, as Oregon and Washington. But it just shows you the big influence of the ocean, Pacific Ocean, and the coldness. By the time you get over to Minnesota, a lot of your temperature is being influenced by coming out of the north. And so that really does make a difference. Mike, you want to get a hold of Tammy for us and see if we can't get her on? And she can start telling us more about the Minnesota grapes and the Minnesota wines and everything else that's available. And the cold hardy grapes, I'll tell you some about the cold hardy grapes if we have time. It depends on how long Tammy talks. I'm not trying to hurry her. If she wants to spend the rest of the program, good for her. If not, then we'll...
Yeah, hold on just a second. I'm trying to get her on the phone real quick.
Okay.
We have to switch phones. She has to switch phones, so I got to call her back.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, the weather outside is okay.
Yeah, the weather outside is delightful. Yeah. Oh, here we are. I got their website up. Carlos Creek, located in Alexandria, Minnesota. They are. Let me find Alexandria, Minnesota on a map here. And I'll tell you exactly where it is. Carlos Creek is located. And I'm sure she can tell us that, but since Mike is trying to find it, now I can't connect. It's not running through and connecting me on this.
Okay, here we are. You ready to go?
I'm set. Tammy, you with us?
Yep,
I'm with you.
Thank you for joining us tonight. Really do appreciate it. I was just telling listeners a little bit about Minnesota and the higher altitudes and the cold hardy grapes that you grow and all that stuff. I didn't go into a lot of detail because I figured that if we're going to talk to anyone, you would be the one that would know all this stuff. So tell us about the grapes that grow in Minnesota.
Well, they're hybrids. I really don't know of anybody that's growing vinifera right now. Which would be your classic, you know, Chardonnay, Riesling, Merlot, Cabernet. Nobody's growing those. So few people experimented maybe 20 years ago, ended up having to bury those vines each year in order to get them to survive our winters. Our winters here, you know, we generally will get a couple of weeks of 20 to 30 below.
Ooh.
That stretch, right, it is that stretch that really is literally a killer on our vines. And so we've taken our grapes that grow here naturally, you know, and crossed those with different vinifera in a process that sometimes will take 30 years in order to really come up with a new grape. And those varietal names are things like Marquette, Frontenac, Frontenac Gris, St. Croix, La Crescent, you know, a lot of place names that are familiar to Minnesotans and are very unfamiliar to people outside of Minnesota. That's kind of been the process, and our grapes can withstand that 20 to 30 below, you know, two-week stretch in the wintertime. And the other key is they ripen in a much shorter season because our summers are shorter.
Uh-huh, which is a good point. When do you usually get bud break up there then?
Well, we're still sitting here right now with a couple feet of snow.
Whoa.
On the ground, so we have not started pruning. And
wow.
It really depends on the year. We will get years where, like last year, we were done pruning March 17th. And we had a very warm April, got the vines all kind of warmed up and the juices flowing, and then we had a killing frost on Mother's Day.
Ooh.
75% of the crop was lost last year in Minnesota.
Oh.
Hold on one more. We had, like I said, 75% of our crop was lost last year. And we had, of the 25% that survived, we had one of the best growing seasons you know, nice water interspersed with good days of heat, but, you know, just not much there. Because the buds, though they hadn't really broken yet, they were right underneath the surface, and that's a really susceptible time for the vines. You know, if you know grapes and you know wine, you know that the grapes really need to form on the primary clusters. So those primary clusters were frozen. They followed by secondary clusters, but sometimes those would only produce two or three grapes.
Wow.
So an odd-looking vine was a resultant of the freeze.
Wow. I didn't know you had that bad of a frost, late frost last year. I knew a few years ago it went as far south as Missouri and stuff like that, but I didn't realize you guys had a late frost last year up in Minnesota, and nobody had mentioned that to me. Did you just reduce your crop, or did you bring in some from other states?
We brought in from other states. We have a pretty consistent and growing production need here, and so in order to meet our needs, we brought in from other states. We also used it as an opportunity. We also use some Merlots and Cabernets, grapes that we bring in from California, as blenders. And so we brought in a couple, 2-3 years of that, filled up our cave. You know, we used some of our tank capacity to kind of get ahead of things that way. So, you know, hoping that this year we will have, some good crop again of Minnesota and replace that. And then we just went further afield and we bought from growers that we hadn't bought from in the past. Some growers were luckier than others, and rather than purchase maybe from 4 or 5 growers, we probably purchased from a dozen Minnesota growers last year.
Uh-huh. So how many growers are there? How many wineries and how many growers are there in the state of Minnesota?
Well, right now there are 35 licensed wineries in the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
There are probably another half a dozen that are scheduled to open this spring.
Wow.
So we're looking to be, you know, real close to that 40, and we probably have around 120 to 150 growers in the state.
That many?
Mm-hmm.
Those
now,
grapes?
That being said, many people have an acre or less at this point because it's a trial period of figuring out what's going to grow on your property best. And there's a lot known about, you know, where Cabernet grows best and what kind of conditions it likes. There's less known about our grape varieties here. So it does take a little bit longer to kind of work with your soil, work with your topography and your particular microclimate and see whether or not you're going to have a good match for La Crescent or a better match for Marquette. And then you've got to figure out what wineries are going to be wanting, what types of grapes. So... And that's the same dance that's played everywhere, I think, you know,
right.
in terms of, you know, figuring out what the consumer is going to want and what the wineries are going to be purchasing and backing that up by 3-4 years, and then that's what you plant.
You mentioned it just now. Expand on the soil type that you get up there and the microclimates and all of the, you know, growing climates and everything. Expand on what Minnesota has to offer for all that stuff.
Well, we have actually two viticultural areas in Minnesota that they occupy a small amount of our total, geographic footprint here. And our soil is going to be very distinct in those two areas. The one encompasses the upper Mississippi River Valley, and it's that large, I think, world's largest AVA that was.
It is, yes.
yes, yeah. It's just. Giant, and I think it goes down to Missouri, but that is going to be river bottom soil. It also is in the southeastern part of the state, and so conditions there are more humid in the summer. They're going to have more fungal problems on their vines, and so there's some varieties like Valiant and King of the North, some that are typically less resistant to downy and powdery mildew, and they won't grow those in that part of the state as readily. Rich river bottom soil, and so it tends to be very vigorous, and so they'll have, probably more challenges with reducing vigor during the growing season. But they also are warmer, and so they'll get a few more heat degree days. We here are also in a viticultural area. It's called Alexandria Lakes, and we are surrounded. We have 5 lakes surrounding us. We're very sandy.
Wow.
We have a little bit higher pH here, but we're a very loose and sandy soil, and we're also closer to North Dakota. Once you get on the Dakota side of Minnesota, you are drier, windier, and so those grape varieties like the Valiant and the King of the North and those that are maybe a little bit more susceptible to downy and powdery mildew are easier for us to grow here. But we're colder.
Uh-huh.
So we have about a half a zone less heat than they do down in the southeastern part. Now, in between there, there's a lot of people growing grapes in a variety of areas of Minnesota. But I'd say if you took a line from Duluth and ran it straight west and looked, you know, north of that, you would not find vineyards. So the upper third of our state is probably not conducive to vineyard plantings, at least at this time.
The high temperatures in the summer in your area and the low temperatures, what are you getting?
Well, we cool down in the evening quite a bit, and that's nice for grapes. Where we're at, we probably do not see temperatures above 90 very often. We're windy. We see a lot of the 75 to maybe 80, and then we'll drop down 50 in the evening. So it's actually an area where you don't even need an awful lot of air conditioning because you can open the windows up at night and there's a lot of cool breezes, a lot of light sweaters being worn out on the wine patio here when you're drinking your glass of wine about 7 o'clock and listening to the music. A lot of people have got a light sweater on. It's very different for the southeastern part of the state where they will see, 95 to 100.
Wow.
Humidity levels are going to be much higher down there. You're going to see that 80, 90, 95% humidity. We are more arid here, so we have a little different climate in that respect as well.
Even with all of your lakes, you don't get
even
humidity?
Even with all the lakes, right?
Wow.
Yeah, we've got deep glacier lakes here. So they're like, if you think about the Finger Lakes, that's a lot of what our lakes are like here, though smaller. So we've got real deep, very cold lakes here, and
wow.
They're not contributing to the humidity like you would expect, like the Great Lakes. You need a little bigger body of water, to do that, to create that. But what it does is it actually mitigates some of the storms. So some of the hail will pass around us. That cluster of lakes does tend to make this area less susceptible to hail, tornadoes, some of the straight line winds. And that protects us. And so we actually, in our AVA, have done some documentation, as I think probably all AVAs have to do, to show the difference in their weather conditions.
And I understand, too, that Carlos Creek was the one that actually petitioned to get the AV name there.
Yes, that is correct. Back in 2005, this became an AVA, and this was not done by us. We purchased the winery 3 years ago. It'll be 3 years ago, April 1st.
Mm.
So that's what you do on April Fool's Day, is you buy a
winery.
Yes.
Yeah. And you can also interpret that the other way, that you were a fool to buy a winery.
Absolutely. It's a reversible sentence. Yeah.
Yes, I'm afraid it is, yes. Since you said you purchased it, that's you, Tammy, and your husband, Tim. And
correct.
You two are the principal owners and do-everything workers on it then.
We are, yeah. In fact, he's standing outside right now guiding folks in for parking for our St. Patrick's Day concert tonight. We have a large event arena attached to our winery here, and so we have a group of Irish musicians coming in here tonight. We're expecting 300 to 400 people
for
a St. Patrick's Day party tonight. So that'll be kind of a fun thing. And because it's Minnesota and it's March and we still have that 2 feet of snow around, parking can be kind of challenging. Sometimes it's difficult to see those lines that guide you as to where your car should go. And when you're expecting great numbers, it's important that everybody observe all of those, correct parking procedures so we don't fit as many cars in here. So, that is one of the odd jobs that you get to do as a winery owner that you maybe weren't thinking of when you purchased.
Yeah.
Be a parking attendant, and a security guard and all the manner of things. But, for the most part, what we get to do is a whole variety of tasks that change with the seasons and keep what we do fresh and interesting, and it's all then a very good time. I would not change it.
Is Tim your winemaker, or do you have another?
No, we don't. We kept the winemaker that was here.
Oh,
and,
good.
And he has been with Carlos Creek Winery for 10 years. He uh-huh. started under the original winemaker, Santiago, who was from Argentina.
Oh.
And he was replaced by a gentleman who came from Colombia. So we actually had quite a bit of South American influence in the winemaking here for the first about 7 years. And then Russ Funk, who was basically the assistant underneath both of those, was moved up to the head winemaker at that point, which was about the time that we were buying. Maybe a year before we bought the winery, he had become the head winemaker. So he continues to study. He's actually going to Geneva on the Lake this weekend. There is a course on sensory evaluation that's taught through VESTA, which is an online viticultural education program. So there's folks out there that are interested in learning more about wine, either enjoying it or making it. VESTA is a wonderful opportunity because it is an online program. So he's going to go and learn more about faults in wines and how to smell them and taste them and detect them and correct them.
Ah, correct them.
Always a good thing.
That's always a good thing. I understand also, you mentioned to me, and I do want to bring up, you are on the board for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
I am. I'm on the board of directors for that. And, we represent those 120 growers plus additional ones because really the Minnesota Grape Growers Association, our largest activity of every year is putting on the Cold Climate Conference. And it's a climate that's dedicated, or it's a conference that's dedicated to growers and producers of wine that are made with cold climate cultivars. We've named probably about 20 wine varieties that fit into that cold group. We also hold a competition every year for people who make wines varieties. And so we had about 700 people in attendance this year at the Cold Climate Conference, and it's a great
wow.
place to learn about what you do with our grapes. And, our primary thing here is because of our higher latitude, we have grapes with greater acidity. Whereas California, every once in a while we hear about a winemaker in California or a certain wine having to have acid added to it, and we all scratch our heads and think, wow, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah,
well, we'll give you some, in fact. You know, yeah. We've got extra. Because that's not something that we ever are having to do. But that being said, we can take our white wines here and make a really very lovely drink that is slightly sweet and balances that acidity. And, you chill that, and we have lots of fans. So we definitely have an easy time with whites here, more of a challenge with reds, where that high acid and trying to keep a dry wine with high acid is more of a challenge. Yeah.
It is, without a doubt. Believe me, I make wines in Florida. I know what you mean.
You have high acidity levels in Florida
yes,
as well?
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, and the reds.
Okay.
Reds are almost impossible. Yeah, I do a hybrid grape down here. I don't use a muscadine. I use a hybrid, University of Florida hybrid, and the acid jumps up on those all the time. So we have a lot of problems with that, too. So
yeah. We are Marquette, actually. That's hovering around that, 0.9, 1.0, maybe 1.1. We've seen acids on that on our Marquette. So that one finishes out as a dry red pretty easily. But some of ours, like Frontenac, that'll come in with maybe 1.4, 1.5, 1.6
wow.
On the acids. Yeah, so a little bit more challenging to do a dry red with that. But it makes a lovely rosé, and it also makes a lovely port. So it's kind of knowing and learning what your grapes are best suited for, as well as if there's some, cultural techniques that we can employ that will reduce acidity in the field.
Uh-huh. How many acres do you have planted?
We have 13 acres of grapes here. We have about 20 acres of apples. About 22% of our production here is apple wine.
Oh.
And we have a very easy time growing apples and actually can get some pretty high Brix on those, the sugar level. In apples, but we have 160 acres on our property, so we anticipate expanding to 20, maybe 40 acres of grapes when we're at where we want to be.
right. I'm on your website here. I'm looking at your apple wines. Apple blueberry, apple cranberry, and apple strawberry. The blueberry, cranberry, and strawberry are your growth too, or do you get those?
No. Those we buy from other growers. We stick to the apples and the grapes, and you know, are just paddling fast upstream to try to keep our knowledge together for those two fruits. And we're not jumping into the blueberries and the cranberries and the strawberries, because there's folks around here that do a great job with that, so we don't have a difficult time. And it's a really, that's a minor component of those wines.
Uh-huh.
You know, they are 97% apple. So there's not a lot of sourcing of that. That's, you know, it's not difficult.
What apples, which isn't about grapes or wine, but I'm curious, what apples do you grow up there?
Well, Honeycrisp is our largest, and that's our state apple here. It was developed by the University of Minnesota. It's a nice, crisp, high-sugar apple. But we also do state fairs and Sweet 16s and Cortlands, and we do a couple of crab apples, chestnut crab, and, it's escaping me now, our other centennial. Centennial and chestnut crab, because those will give a little acidity to the apples, which sometimes we are searching for that blend between acidity and sweetness in our apple wines.
Yeah.
It's very different making the apple wine. It's probably, I would say, more challenging than the grape to make a nice tasting apple wine. But we've had a couple of successes. Our apple blueberry is our third best selling wine, and has won multiple gold medals. So that's a wine that we're very pleased with. It's got a beautiful color. Blueberries in apple yields a color that looks a lot like a red wine, a red table wine.
Wow, sounds
interesting.
So the
colors people are familiar with, and they're, you know, they think, oh, yeah, that looks like something to drink. So
that sounds interesting. Your other wines, excuse me, I'm looking at your site here. The Marquette, I noticed here, sold out, obviously a good-selling wine. Is that 100% Marquette?
That one is 91% Marquette, 9% Zinfandel on that particular vintage.
Oh.
And, you know, so it kind of depends upon the vintage and what it needs. Right now we are doing a blend, 100% Marquette, but it's a blend of two vintages.
Oh.
That looks like what we will be bottling up for this summer. So Marquette is a new grape. Last year was the first year we were able to get a commercially viable crop in enough quantity. And we were playing around in some carboys, but we really needed to have, you know, some tons to work with. And we got that with our 2009 harvest. So 2010, of course, we had that frost. So we were anticipating having greater tonnages of Marquette to work with. Indeed, we had about the same. So this year there should be more Marquette in the marketplace, and we're hoping to be able to replace that sold out with available. And a lot of it just really comes down to availability of the grape. Minnesotans are very excited about it because it is a dry red wine. It's about 60% of its parentage is Pinot Noir.
Oh.
So if folks are familiar with Pinot Noir, that's what you're really it's similar, a little higher alcohol, a little heavier body, but it is not so, you know, its pairing is going to pair with foods that Pinot pairs well with. You know, so it's great with your turkeys and your porks and you know, maybe your rotisserie chickens, something with a little bit of, you know, heavier spice to a chicken. Smoked salmon.
It sounds good.
Smoked salmon, yeah.
I'm not familiar with the Marquette grape myself. It sounds exciting. I noticed that when I was going through the different websites in Minnesota, a lot of them are using it, and sounds like an exciting grape, an exciting wine coming out of that.
It is. It is. We have another one, Petite Pearl. Again, no commercially viable crop yet with that. That has lower acid levels than Marquette. It's also a red grape. It was developed by a private grape developer here in Minnesota. We have about 400 of those plants in, and it'll be exciting to see what happens with that.
Which one again, please?
It's called Petite Pearl, and you won't find it on anybody's website. Nobody's got it yet. It's still in the ground. We're still waiting for first harvest on that of enough quantity that somebody, you know, and we've seen some test bottles coming out, but, you know, nothing that somebody's been able to put a label on and put on their shelf. Not enough quantity yet, but that's a very exciting grape. So we've got a couple of nice reds that are finally coming out. Now I think the challenge is to work on a white that we can finish out dry, maybe do a malolactic fermentation, kind of Chardonnay style. There's a lot of growers and wineries now that are searching for that. But I am going to have to say goodbye. I know I am wanted at the ticket booth at the St. Patrick's Day thing.
Well, you do have a big event tonight. Tammy, I greatly appreciate your time with us, and thank you so much for the information. Everything was great. Skilly and Duff, it's your quartet tonight, I see. Here.
Skilly and Duff. Yep.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm sad I can't make it. I'm Irish myself, so that could be a very fun time tonight. One more question before we go. State of Minnesota, how are they for wineries? Are they against you, for you, indifferent? What is their attitude?
I would say the state of Minnesota is learning.
Okay.
Really trying to figure out what their place is. We have a lot of supporters in the legislature that, you know, say, what do you need from us? You know, what kinds of laws and things do you need? It's always difficult for us, you know, that the right to be able to self-distribute to liquor stores is really important. And I don't know what your situation is in Florida, but it's something that we hold dear. We do have that right here in Minnesota.
Wow.
But as we, you know, because we're the ones who can best convey to the liquor store, hey, this is a Marquette, and this is what it does, and this is what it tastes like. If you have a distributor coming, he's got a whole bunch of wines to try and educate a liquor store owner about, and here's one that he has limited quantity of, the likelihood that that's going to get a lot of cheerleading, you know, is less.
Is zero.
And understandably, if I was in that same situation as a liquor distributor, I probably would act similarly. But as a winery owner, you know, we can be passionate enthusiasts for that Minnesota grape. We can go up to that liquor store owner and take that time and teach them about Marquette and Frontenac Gris and why their consumers will love it. Then we can get our volumes up because we're going to increase demand, and the next thing you know, we're going to be calling on a distributor saying, hey, you know what, I can't schlep all this wine around on my own. I need some help. So we're trying to convince licensed beverage that, you know, this is not sidestepping a three-tier system. This is indeed something that's going to help everybody get a bigger piece of the pie, because we can't grow the pie unless
that's
we
right.
have this.
That's
so,
right. No.
So that's where we're at right now. I would say, you know, we don't have a bad situation, but if we try and increase anything or change anything, we do get some resistance from, you know, licensed beverage, and so we're just trying to work together to educate them on really how this whole thing is going to grow and how we can grow together.
Fantastic. I will give all the information about your winery to our listeners. Thank you again. Go enjoy this evening, and hopefully we'll get a chance to visit you sometime.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you
too.
Okay. Yeah, I just pulled up their contact information also. I wasn't sure if she was going to be able to get to that, but they had to go. The event starts in, are they on Central Time?
They're on Central, yeah. They're on Central.
Okay, so it starts
45 minutes.
Okay. I was like, no, because it's 8:30 here. It's, okay, because on the top of the website under events, it says 8:30, and then down underneath the topic heading, it's at 7:30. So
7:30, yeah.
Obviously, it sounds like a big event. They're going to do all kinds of stuff. And,
3,000-4,000 people. I mean, mercy. That's a lot.
It's going to be big. So they're in Alexandria, Minnesota. I don't know if you have the address and phone number and stuff.
Yes,
but,
I do. I've got all the information here. They're located in Alexandria, Minnesota, which is north of. Actually, rather far north, surprisingly far north when I was looking at it. They're located on, let me pull this up here and take a look at it. They are located on just off of I-94 north, just north of Alexandria. When you're going north on I-94 out of Minneapolis-St. Paul, take the Alexandria exit. And then they are located at 6693 County Road 34 Northwest. That is Alexandria, Minnesota. If you want to get a hold of them, 320-846-5443. Email them at ccwinery@carlscreekwinery. And their website, CarlosCreekWinery.com. They're open. Winter hours are from Sunday through Thursday, 12 to 5, and then Friday and Saturday, 11 to 6. The summer hours expand. There is a $5 cost for tasting, but I don't know how many they taste or anything like that. So $5 is reasonable if they go into the wines and all. So get an opportunity. If you're up in that part of the world, then by all means, check out Carlos Creek Winery.
It sounds like they also do dog sled rides. They have a lot of festivals throughout the year. And, of course, the big big deal tonight at 7:30 their time, which would be like 8:45 our time or something. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how that works. But,
8:30.
Yeah, there you go.
We don't add on 15 minutes.
Depends on traffic. I don't know. It could be the traffic. So if you just happen to be listening and you're in the area of Alexandria, Minnesota, Skilly and Duff Irish Quartet is going to be there. And they were first place winners in 2009 of the Minnesota Irish Fair Music Competition. So definitely, and they have events like all through the year. There's like all kinds of things going on. So a big thing there. And they're open 361 days a year. So
those major holidays, I would guess that's what it is there.
Very active there.
And they've got all sorts of stuff going on there. Their wines, too. I'm not sure. I was going to ask Tammy about shipping and where and what the rules are for shipping, what states they can ship to. I don't know. You can call them or fax them or something if you're curious about some of the wines. 9.375% tax is applied to it, though. Wow, that's high tax, it seems to me. I don't know. I just maybe that's because of wine, or I don't know what it is, but some of the wines really sound fascinating. Those apple wines,
that's made just doing the same process but with apples.
Yeah, basically you're fermenting apples. You can ferment anything. It's just a matter of adding yeast to it and starting the fermentation and then working on the sugars. So the apple wine is they said they're getting the picking up with real high sugar, real high Brix at the beginning, which from what she's saying, some of those apples have real high sugar content. So it would be pretty easy to do a fermentation, just add a yeast to it and then start your fermentation. So it sounds interesting. They have a wine called a Freeze, which is apple juice was reduced to 1/3 its original volume. And which, you know, really makes it a high concentration of residual sugar and stuff. Then the little pomegranate juice was added after the fermentation to make a sweet dessert wine. That sounds interesting, too. So they've got quite a variety of wines there that are available. We got a few. I want to talk about some of the grapes in Minnesota. This is really fascinating to me, the grapes that are available there. The Minnesota Grape Growers Association has been working with University of Minnesota trying to come up with cold hardy grapes. And just four of the wine grapes that we're hearing a lot in this part of the country. The Frontenac, and I've heard it pronounced three or four different ways. Different people are pronouncing it different ways. But the Frontenac is Frontenac, Frontenac. A very dark, dark blue grape. It was introduced in 1996 by the University of Minnesota. It is a hybrid of a Vitis Ripperia 89 and the French hybrid Landot 4511, which are just, you know, probably hybrids in themselves. The wine is hardy up to -33 degrees Fahrenheit, very disease resistant, almost complete immunity from a downy mildew, and it is always a heavy producer with a medium to large cluster of just black berries. The wine itself, deep garnet color, which brings out some cherry aroma, and with some blackberry, blackcurrant, and plum taste in the mouth. It is a well-received grape in that part of the country, in that part of the world, actually. They also, the Frontenac Gris, which was just introduced in 2003, rather recently. It's a darker colored grape, but it's a white wine version of the Frontenac. It is started as a single bud mutation yielding a gray fruit, thus the name Gris. It comes out with an amber-colored fruit juice. It is shows the same characteristics as the Frontenac. Good sugar, late season ripening, mid to late season ripening, and it is the sugar level is 24-25 bricks. It says not uncommon, so very high sugar content on that, which is really great. The wine itself, aromas of peach and apricot. Nice acidity coming out on the grapes. Great for table and dessert wines, and also very good to make an ice wine. The Northern United States Canadian ice wine style. The La Crescent is another one. This is a blend of parentage of the St. Pepin and Swanson. The Muscat Hamburg is also a part of the heritage of this grape. Again, hardy to minus 34 degrees Fahrenheit. Moderately disease resistant. Sometimes exhibits some downy mildew, so it's something that has to be watched and can be controlled with a spray program. The wine itself, intense apricot and peach and citrus nose, making an off-dry to sweet white wine. If produced in the German style, it's reminiscent of Vignole and the Riesling. High acidity, which makes for a good dessert wine or late harvest style wines. And then there is the Marquette, which we were just talking about, which I'm rather excited. I've never had a Marquette. I really would like to try a Marquette wine. This is the cousin of the Frontenac and a grandson of the Pinot Noir. Originally across from the Minnesota 1044, which is a complex hybrid of the V. Riparia and the Vitis vinifera and other Vitis species with a Rivat 262 as parentage also. Viticulturally, it's a great grape, resistant to downy mildew, powdery mildew, and black rot. So, wow. It is a good canopy and good growth. The wine itself usually comes out high sugars, moderate acid, very manageable in a winery, easy to work with. Finishes with some nice, attractive ruby color and good tannins with notes of cherry, berry, black pepper, and spice on the nose and palate. Just exciting grape. I never heard of it. And I started to do these northern climate things, and it's just really an exciting grape there. A couple of three more here. The Bluebell, introduced in 1944, is a eating grape. Same thing with the Swenson Red, introduced in 1978, and the Edelweiss, introduced in 1978. Now, the Edelweiss is used a lot as a grape wine for as a wine for grape. And wine for grape, wine, a grape for wine. My engineer had to correct me there. You can find a lot of wines being made out of the Edelweiss. It is, but it looks a lot like your regular table grape, your green table grape you can grow in the grocery stores right now. It's about that color and that size of cluster and that size of grape. So, but these are cold hardy grapes that the University of Minnesota have developed over the years. I'm going to go into that and share that a little bit because I thought that was really quite interesting on those grapes there.
Oh, yeah.
A couple more wineries here. We've got a few minutes here, about 6 minutes on air. A couple more wineries I want to mention here that I was looking at. Tammy said that I just lost it here. Tammy said that the draw a line from I'm losing everything here. I'm
is it Duluth or something?
Go from Duluth to Fargo, she said, and it pretty much take care of it. Actually, there's three wineries north of that. one that's almost right on that line and a couple others that are north of there. They've expanded up in that area. But it's pretty much true. Everything is south. You don't find much of anything on up in the northern regions. And Carlos Creek Winery is one of the few that is more of a northern stretch, northern area than the ones that are the cluster of them. A lot of them around Minnesota and stuff like that. I noticed, too, a lot of wineries do fruit wines. There's an awful lot of fruit wineries coming out of there. Not everybody's growing grapes, although she said there are 35 wineries there. And the list I saw, I only had 32 listed. So there's probably more coming up all the time, too, and more that are available that aren't making on the list. Falconer Vineyards is one that I noticed that was rather interesting. Falconer Vineyards is has some interesting wines. They have a Prairie Star, which is one of those hybrids that has been made just for the northern part. They said it's along the lines of a Chardonnay in the taste. Also Potter John's, another northern grape, which with nice fruity characters and all that. Interesting. They also do the Marquette. If anyone listening is in the Minnesota area or travels to Minnesota and Florida, grab a Marquette for me. I would like to try one. I don't think I would be able to find one down here at all. So I really would like to try that Marquette. Also, while and that pretty much sums up Minnesota, but Mike, I'm sure, was going to announce it. I'll beat you to the punch here. We're going to get away from states for a couple of weeks here. We've got some special speakers that we're going to have come on the air and talk about a couple, three different things. Still related to wine. We are all about wine. But one speaker who is a grower out in California does a no-water vineyard where he natural water, that's it. He doesn't irrigate, doesn't do anything else. Sounds very interesting. He's going to be joining us. Also have another guy who has been writing a book and talking about the millennial wine drinkers. The millennial, we've all heard of the baby boomers. We've heard of the Generation X, the Generation Y. Well, the millennials are the ones that follow them. They are the young ones now. They're the ones that are just turning 21 to about 26, 27, that age group. These are the ones out there that are really getting away a lot from the liquors and everything and starting to get more and more into wine, which is an enormous market for wineries now. This is one of the reasons why wineries are expanding and exploding, because of the millennials. So we'll get a speaker for that also. Also, I have a lady on my Facebook page who's a fan to the winery, who is a winemaker in Australia. I'm going to see if I can't get a hold of her and see if I can't get her on the air one night. So that could be interesting, too. Yeah, that could be fun. So if
we can get her on Skype or something.
Yeah, get her on Skype. So if tune in, stay tuned. We're going to get away from the States for a little bit. When we do get back to the States, it will in fact, I'm going to be bottling probably in 2 or 3 weeks and may miss a program there because I have to do some bottling. Although this is a lot of fun, bottling does take a priority. Yeah. Sorry, Mike. But we're going to get back to the States pretty soon here. Mississippi will be coming up. I'll let you give all the information here in the last 90 seconds.
Okay, great. I don't know if I can do it, but March 19th at Florida State's Winery. You definitely need to make it down here for that. And for a wine class. Wine class is from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. And they also do the class. Well, I mean, I was reading something else. The topics that are covered during the wine class is a brief history of wines, wine grape varietals, wine grape diseases, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting process and scoring, rating of wines, and screensaver. Let's see, sampling of the Florida State's wines and discussing each in detail. It's a great class. You definitely want to check it out. It's only 3 hours, but you get a lot of information in that 3 hours. It's very entertaining and informative, and that is this Saturday, March 19th, at Florida State's Winery, located that's a different scroll here. Located at, like, I haven't memorized it, 25241 State Road 52. 25241 State Road 52. That is 4 miles west of Interstate 75. If you get Interstate 75, go to exit 285. Go west 4 miles, and you'll be making a little right turn when you see the signs, or you'll be turning to the north when you see those. When you see the signs.
Goodbye, all
anyway.
You live people, archive people.
Oh, yeah.
Stay with us.
Oh yeah. Yes, stay with us because we have 4 more days worth of information here. Hold on just a second. It's call the winery directly. Are they off already? Is this like
they're gone? Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'll just slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
Call the winery directly at area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. That is the phone number for Florida State's Winery. Or email corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. Or visit the website at floridaestateswines.com. floridaestateswines.com. And if nothing else, if you can just give them a call and or email and let them know that you're listening to the show All About Wine, I'm sure they'd love to hear that. I'm sure Ron would love to hear that.
Yes, I would.
And we'd like to know that you're out there. And if you have any comments or anything, be sure to drop them an email or call directly and you know, let them know your comments and everything. Florida State's Winery is open daily, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. And definitely go by there. They're closed major holidays, but I don't think we have any major holidays coming up, do we?
Nope.
Okay.
Next major holiday is this today.
What? This is
St. Patty's Day.
It's a holiday? Okay. Sorry.
No.
Okay. I was like, well, but it's not. Okay. So you were open today.
We were open today.
Oh, there you go. So 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., 7 days a week. There's events going on at different times. And when you go to their website, you definitely want to check out the newsletter subscription and subscribe to the email, and you will get a periodic email letting you know when the events are coming up, and it's very informative. There's also wine recipes, wine facts, and all kinds of information about what's going on at the winery. Or visit them and like them, join them on Facebook. And you will also find Florida State's Winery on Facebook, and definitely join them there as well, and get information on the winery there. So, but if anything, just you know, let them know that you're listening, and all that, you know, any comments or anything you have about the show, because it is being listened to quite a bit in the, especially in the archives. I know for sure. I know they'd love to hear from you. And this is the extra minutes at the end of the show.
This is, you know, this is the add-on to the archive people. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, and if you have an RV.
Yeah. While we're on the subject.
And an unlimited BP card that we can use to fill up that RV. we would like to take the show on the road. But right now all we have is a pickup truck and a I don't know what you got, but I'll use my truck if I have to. We'll just
yeah,
set up
I got a convertible.
Well, there you go.
Pickup truck and convertible. that would be a good combo, yeah. Yeah.
But and I have a CDL, so if it's a Class A motorhome RV, then I can drive that legally with air brakes and all that kind of stuff. I don't even know if you have to have one for that, but
I don't
anyway.
Know. Yeah.
But anyway, it's there if we need to. So if you have that. And I also found an article, which I'll bring up during one of these shows. We're doing we're not in Virginia yet, but there was an article in the AOPA pilot magazine that I have. It's Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. It's called Wings Over the Vines, and it's about Williamsburg, Virginia. So at some point, I will let you know about that. But they mentioned how you can fly and basically, well, I don't know. It's a short 1 mile trek to the winery up there in Virginia. So I'll give you that information. Maybe we can get them. That'd be cool to get them on the phone too. When we do Virginia, but we're still in the M's, and but we're going to take a break from that and do some miscellaneous shows. And you have bottling coming up, and we may have to take a break from the show anyway. So we'll see how that goes, because some people think bottling is more important, and I understand.
it won't be all about wine. It'll be just all about Ron being out of work because he has nothing to sell.
That's right. And then we'll be forget the RV. If you could send some cash, that would be.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Keep it going.
Just to keep us going. We'll still talk to you, but we need the money.
We should after you're done with that, maybe we should talk. I know we did something on labels, and I think a long time ago we talked about bottling. Maybe you can give us more, more of what you do out there when you're in the bottling state of mind or however you call it, when you're in that that mode you have to do. It'd be kind of interesting to know the process that's involved there. So I don't know.
That's something I'll bring up during. Yeah, I'll do that. That's okay. A good idea.
We'll have a special guest coming up, and we'll get those ready to go for the next show. And I guess that'll do it for now. I don't know what time is it. Finally dark outside. Yeah,
it is dark outside. Yeah,
yes,
the bus
is.
People are leaving, and so we need to wrap it up.
Okay. All right, we'll talk to everybody next Thursday on All About Wine, unless something comes up with Ron. You think it's going to be next week or no?
No, it won't be next week.
Okay. No. So we'll do that.
We'll see everyone next week then.
Yes. You all have a good one, and thank you as always. Let me pull them in here real quick. Hold on just a second.